Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's your host, Dana. Today I'm going to do something a bit different. It is episode 110, and it's actually been 90 episodes since I did a special episode of either me talking, or today I'm going to include some clips from previous guests. So I am going to highlight educator self-care on the episode today. I'm going to include clips from guests that were on the podcast during the summer and fall of 2020. So I'm getting the feeling as I record this mid-September 2021 that educators are kind of falling back into that just getting burned out and wanting out of education. And I think this is a great time to kind of highlight those things that these previous guests said, you know, during this time about a year ago. We do have things that we can be thankful for that we're experiencing this school year as opposed to last. It's not 100% back to normal, and we don't know when it will be, but we are in a better place. So I'm going to include episodes from a burned-in teacher, Amber Harper, the Afro educator Alexis Shepherd, Dana Thomas, who is part of Happy Teacher Revolution, Hans Apple, a counselor at a middle school, Jen Molitor, she is a elementary school principal, and she wrote the book on teacher happiness, and Sarah Johnson, former principal and leadership coach, who wrote the book Balance Like a Pirate. So I will go into each episode one right after the other in that order, and you'll hear clips from each of those guests on some of those tips that they give to educators who are burned out and how to look at things differently. So I hope you like this episode, and please share it on social media.
I'm going to give you the short version because all 12 years of my teaching career, I started teaching in 2006, 2007. Mm-hmm. All of the 12 years that I taught, I felt like I was on a roller coaster of burnout. Mm-hmm. I loved teaching. I loved my kids. I went through periods where I also got along wonderfully with my colleagues, my fellow teaching team, and other times where I didn't. And it seemed to me during this whole roller coaster episode that there was something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And that that I just felt the entire time that I taught, I just felt like what's wrong with me? Like, this can't be normal. I'm not going to settle for this being just the way teaching is, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I was struggling and when I was challenged, with teaching, and not with teaching, but with teacher burnout, I would try mm-hmm. to talk about it, and it ended up becoming like a venting session. Yeah. And there was never any action taken. So I'm sure you can relate to that, right?
Yeah.
So where I was challenged is that, you know, I would be told, you know, if I was struggling, you know, go for a walk, take a bubble bath, take some deep breaths, you know, those are all great self-care practices. Then I was also told, you know, to practice in some self-indulgence, go have a drink, go out with your friends, you know, back and go buy yourself something nice. But what I was challenged by is that I did practice self-care. I exercised every day. I ate healthily. I drank plenty of water. I did all these things to help myself in my daily habits to be a healthy, happy teacher. Mm-hmm. But when I was truly challenged and I really wanted to do something about it rather than to be looked at as a negative teacher. It just never turned out the way that I had hoped that it would when I tried to open that conversation, because I didn't know how to truly voice what I was challenged with. I didn't know how to put words to how I felt because I loved teaching, but there was something inside of me that just wasn't feeling quite right. I just felt off at certain points in my career.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You're fine. And I should add too, being a burned in teacher is not about becoming Instagram famous or creating YouTube videos where you're doing all of these really flashy things with kids. It's not about becoming jazz hands and extroverted if you're an introvert and you're a quiet teacher. It's not about changing who you are.
Yeah.
It's really about deciding what you want. Do you want to stay in second grade? Do you want to learn to love second grade again? Or do you want to move to fourth grade or another grade level? Or do you in fact want to leave education? Like, I think there's this crossroads that we come to where, you know, and my husband even asked me at one time, and this wasn't in reference to teaching, but I had clearly had come to a crossroads at another point in my life. And he just said, "What do you want?" And I was afraid to tell him what I truly wanted. But when I was honest with myself and with him, my whole world changed. And I think that that's what we need to allow ourselves. And I have it right here. You are capable and worthy of so many things, of being honest with yourself and taking control of your life and of your burnout. So sorry, I'm all hyped up now. So
no. And I think that's a great point to really think about, because a lot of people just go year after year. They have the same job assignment to be a better teacher, right?
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes we look at personal goals a lot of times about, you know, physical health, you know, fitness, things like that. But there are also goals like maybe you and your family have talked about taking a trip for years and it just has never happened. And now all of a sudden your son's a senior and it's now or never. You know, we have this one life, this one opportunity to completely optimize our time on this earth. And our personal goals, we continue to sacrifice our personal growth and our happiness for a job. And, you know, sometimes teachers cringe when I, you know, identify teaching as a job, but it's a job. You get paid to be there. You sign a contract. And that's not saying that you go in, clock in, be, you know, stone cold all day and just say, "This is just my job." That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, though, we do have to set boundaries around that job and put our own human, our human wants and needs ahead of our job. And then never settle is the last N. So that's really just putting burned in into practice, whether you have a small hardship or a global pandemic, really thinking about, okay, let me step back here because my president's saying this thing, my superintendent's saying this, the public is saying this, my fellow teachers are saying this. Okay, how long have I been feeling this way? Well, since about February 29th, you know, okay, so what have I done? You know, who are my people? What are my core values? And then going through that whole process again, how would somebody with my brand behave on social media when addressing this? You know, how would someone with my brand prepare myself for this challenge? Okay, what are my true challenges here? What can I control? So it's just going through that whole burned in process whenever you are faced with something that maybe in the past you would have blown up and possibly not handled a situation in a very professional manner, or you would maybe become a victim again. And I've said this so many times, Dana, like, I'm not going to pretend to know anybody's specific teaching challenge or why they're burned out. You know, there are so many different reasons for burnout. There are so many different reasons that people are doing what they're doing, where they are doing it. But it all comes with the realization that we cannot continue to sit in this teacher misery and accept it as our eternal reality.
Yeah. And I think,
yeah, absolutely. So I have had what I would consider two encounters with burnout. And so it started, I've been teaching for 9 years, like you just so eloquently stated. And I experienced my first burnout during year four. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it kind of took me a while to recognize that that's where I was, but I was extremely bitter. And I had this really sort of undying perception of what it took to do my job well. Mm-hmm. And so that meant that my lessons had to be dynamic and creative constantly. And so I poured a lot of time and energy and effort into finding these incredible lessons and these incredible resources. And at that time, that belief was also that in order for a lesson to be really incredible, it had to be purely original. And so I wasn't using sort of foundational building blocks that were already there. I was creating everything from scratch, yeah. which took so much out of me. I had a large class that year. In that class were some students I had had 2 years previously when I had taught in second grade. I was teaching fourth grade at the time. And so I was just really stressed all the time. And that stress led to bitterness and resentment because I was living in this space where I thought that all of the things that I was doing were things that I absolutely had to do in order to do the job well. And so it just made me really angry. And I just kind of thought, well, I'm burned out and this is just a part of teaching. So I'll struggle through and that'll be that. And I remember my husband saying to me, oh my gosh, do we need to find you something else to do? How can I help you? He just had no idea how to support me because I was so angry all of the time. And I was so devoid of energy that any additional energy that I had, rather than pouring it into things that were going to fill me up, I tried to reserve it and I just wasn't available for him, for friends, or really for anyone. I was kind of this island unto myself trying to gear myself up to go back into the classroom, you know, the next day. So that year, I just kind of was like, well, I burned out. This is a part of teaching. And I moved on. So then again, in year six, I didn't have quite the same experience, but I was very restless. I had a great group of students that year. They were easy, you know, as we call it. And I thought, you know, this will be a great time for me to get out. At this point, my burnout was more from frustration with the system mm-hmm. and just how education is set up and all of the expectations that are placed on us as educators to move our students, to affect the achievement in our students. And so I applied for six jobs. This was the 2017-18 school year. And I was like, this is going to be my year. And I applied for jobs that were within the education setting, but that were not classroom teaching. And I was really confident that at least one of those jobs was going to come through. And so I didn't do anything crazy, like give away my classroom stuff or share with anyone like, hey, this is going to be my last year. But I was pretty certain that come summertime, I'm probably going to get some calls. I'm going to go through the interview processes and, you know, something will come of this. And so July of that year came and no emails, no calls, no nothing. And it was getting to that time where I needed to start going back to my classroom and prepping things for back to school. And I had a little bit of an emotional breakdown just thinking about the fact that I'm still going to be teaching. You know, I really didn't have any other options. Not working was not an option. And I hadn't gotten any of these jobs that I applied for. So I remember calling one of my friends and just, you know, crying on the phone to her about how upset I was and how anxious I was feeling and how tense I was feeling about reckoning with the fact that I was going to have to return to or continue to teach. And I went to her house shortly thereafter, maybe a day or two later. And one of the things that I recognized when I was talking to her was that part of my frustration was myself. And I recognized that my attitude and the way that I thought were kind of working against me and that I was going to have to facilitate my own paradigm shift mm-hmm. in order to even start to move forward.
Yeah.
And so I read a couple books and that's kind of where my self-work started. And that's what eventually led to this self-care platform is that it really came out of this very deeply personal experience that I had with it, where I was able to pull myself out of this hole using self-care practices and strategies, which I didn't realize that's what they were at the time, But in hindsight, I recognize now that that's what that was.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Kind of dust myself off and think, wait a minute, you've been kind of beating yourself up over not doing all of these things that you've put on this pedestal over here in these ideas that you think make a great teacher, when the things that you have been doing that you were so hard on yourself for are actually things that are okay, or things that are great teaching strategies, or things that are actually good for kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you said a little bit about that you invested in yourself more professionally. You started going to conferences, and you weren't intending on, you know, building your own wellness site or brand, right? But that's kind of what came out of it. So walk me through a little bit through how the Afro Educator came out of all this.
Yeah. So I read Unshakable and I was feeling really empowered. And right after I read that book, I thought, okay, so I've never invested, you know, at this point I've been teaching 6 years and I had never invested in myself professionally in a way that was intentional. I had gotten my master's two or three years into my career. And so for a while, that was my professional development, but my heart really wasn't in it. It wasn't something I was passionate about. It was one of those things where I went through the motions because, you know, I wanted to say that I did it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what? I'm actually going to connect with other teachers and other education professionals outside of the people that I have to interact with in my community and, mm-hmm. and at work and at my school. And then I was thinking, okay, I'm also going to go to at least one conference that is not required, that is not a mandate, that I am going to go just for my own professional growth and enjoyment. It will also simultaneously, hopefully, help me connect with other educators who maybe are like-minded and who are there for similar reasons. And so
they can contact and, you know, where to plug them in. I mean, you know, hopefully as we go on with the year and depending on how long the pandemic lasts or, you know, how long it is until a vaccine, you know, that those students will, you know, be able to access some of the content.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think too, and I just remembered this when you were talking, this kind of memory was triggered, but just before this podcast, I had a parent reach out to me who's reached out to me before saying, you know, I'm such and such's parent and such is failing all of their classes. And we don't know how to help. We don't know how to help our child. We feel like we're not equipped to handle the technology needs and to help with, you know, these different technology platforms, but we also don't feel safe sending our student to school. I mean, email literally said, help, what can we do? Can you help us? And that just makes me think, and I've said this to a couple of friends before, I do think that districts have some culpability in the execution of whatever their reopening plans are. And so for my district, having require parents to sign documentation stating that they would have they would have reliable internet access and that they would be at home to help their students. Well, there's a gap there. And that gap is their knowledge and being able to access and operate the technology that the students have. And I mean, they weren't provided with any sort of training or any sort of, you know, and so there's an inequity there too, in that some of the parents who have chosen to keep their students home don't have the resources or haven't been provided with the resources to really support them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so then that falls on us as well. But, you know, when you have a class load of 60 or 70 kids, number one would be start with why.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are experiencing self-doubt, or when someone is maybe causing you to experience those feelings, you feel like you're not doing enough, you feel like you're falling short, or you're feeling discouraged, mm-hmm. I would encourage you to revert back to that question of, am I doing what I feel matters most for kids? Mm-hmm. And if you can answer yes to that question, take some of the pressure off, mm-hmm. because ultimately that's what matters most for your students. Because no matter how much content you get through or how much assessing you do, if those social emotional needs aren't addressed and aren't met, and I mean in a way that's woven into your classroom or school culture, then the academic achievement isn't going to be at the level that it could be either. So focused on what matters most.
That's so important to remember. Where can people find you online and connect with you, and that we deserve better? So what would you say are tips that you would give to listeners who are maybe in a similar environment that have been there for years, or who just feel like they can't do anything or speak up about it?
I think it's the most important thing, the most important message is that we are all able to have power and action over our own choices, even though so often it might not feel like it, whether it's the curriculum that's mandated or the policies that are being mandated or folks in positions of power and authority who might not have even spent any time in the classroom creating policies and enacting change that very much directly impacts the lives of students and that of their teachers. And so I think what is really important for educators to know that they, for them to know they are enough, that their self-esteem is what is most important, and their sense of self-worth and self-value, that their evaluation is not, does not equate to their personhood or their humanity or what they're able to offer to their students in the classrooms. I think one of the most important things that I want to impart on educators who are listening to this and who are part of your podcast community, Dana, are that it is an act of revolution to take care of oneself, right? Like for the folks who are doing the advocacy work, who are speaking up, who are continuing to follow their code of morals for what they believe is right and just and best for the kids in their classroom. It takes a toll on folks who are in the social advocacy space and who are in the social justice space. And so it really is an act not of self-indulgence to take care of oneself. It's not selfish. Rather, that act of self-preservation by means of self-care is the most revolutionary act that one can do.
I like how you really point out, like, it is an act of revolution. Like, teachers, if they can, teach from their best self and reflect on their own practice and work with colleagues in evaluating their practice, that goes a long way than an evaluation that's maybe based on one observation, right?
And to be honest with you, my journey with Happy Teacher Revolution started before I was even a teacher, when I was still a student, when I realized directly and firsthand the impact that a teacher could have on the life of a child, even to save a life. I don't know what my teachers' performance rubrics or scores were when I was in high school or when I was in college, but those teachers I consider my emotional first responders, because those teachers were my heroes who recognized the warning signs of when I was struggling with mental illness, with depression, with anxiety, with panic attacks. They noticed those subtle changes in behavior as warning signs. They had built relationships with me to be able to have those conversations, to provide medical information for me to seek treatment, to get help. They provided life-saving differentiation and accommodation for me when I was in crisis. And again, like, I don't know if they were excellent or whatever the language around the rubric for their performance evaluation was that year, but like, what kind of a performance evaluation would it be to acknowledge that teachers save lives, that teachers quite literally, and I think that inspiration was the reason I went into the classroom myself. And I think that was where I was coming from as well, from starting Happy Teacher Revolution, was I was thinking, oh my gosh, no one is looking out for the teachers. Yeah. Who's looking out for them? Because they're constantly looking out for everyone else. And I think that is really the message behind Happy Teacher Revolution, is that we know that educators are not renewable resources. They're human beings too.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you told me a little bit in the pre-chat about how self-care is important, not only just for teachers in their practice and in their home life, but it's also an equity and social justice issue. So tell me a little bit about how those two things tie in.
Yeah, so I think that is another huge part of the message of Happy Teacher Revolution, is that it's not just some fluffy woo-woo thing, but rather if we're not adequately supporting the mental health and wellness of teachers, especially our early childhood teachers, we're actually perpetuating the school to prison pipeline. Mm-hmm. And I'm most specifically referencing research coming from Yale's Child Study Center, where they were evaluating early childhood teachers and the rates of suspensions and referrals to early childhood students, how it later affects their literacy rates, which later affects in our city of Baltimore, where I taught, there are third grade reading levels were used by the city to determine how many prison cells to build in decades to come.
Wow.
And so what Yale Child Studies Research Center has found is that teachers who are stressed out, who have low job satisfaction, who are burnt out, are more likely to suspend and refer students to the office. But not only that, they're more likely to refer and suspend students of color, and they're more likely to refer or suspend boys more than girls at a rate four times as many boys than girls. And so if we're not supporting our educators, especially at early childhood levels, in those grade levels, but if we're not adequately supporting our teachers around their happiness, their satisfaction, their workplace, their overall mental health and wellness, then we're perpetuating the school to prison pipeline. And so I think having conversations around equity when it comes to supporting our teachers, we also know that burnout are higher, rates of burnout are higher for our special educators, mm-hmm. rates of burnout are higher for our teachers of color as well. And we only have 2% of teachers who are Black men, whereas it's upwards of 77% of white women. And so if we're seeing a higher rate of burnout for our teachers of color, we need to have more diversity in our schools and our buildings, not just classroom teachers, but school psychologists and social workers. And we have to make sure that we're supporting our teachers' mental health and wellness, self-care, of all, not just teachers, but of all adults, anyone in a caregiver relationship.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
That's what comes first, right? That's what before Bloom. And kind of in that same vein, how were you able to support your students as a counselor during the shutdown? How were you able to help them feel safe at home?
Yeah, and I think, you know, part of it is I feel like that was challenging for me. Mm-hmm. I feel like it took me a little while to sort of get my legs underneath me because it wasn't how I was used to being a counselor. You know, I feel like even using that word counselor in a remote style feels weird because it certainly felt like a different role and job and delivery of, you know, the services that I normally would provide. So, but I think, you know, it was, you know, just the constant connections, right? The emails and the Zoom calls and the phone calls and just, you know, trying to reach out to kids that you're worried about or that are at risk or that, you know, just need that consistent check-in. I will say this though, you know, if anything, COVID really reinforced to me that relationships and school culture are so pivotal mm-hmm. because, you know, I feel like I can't imagine being a classroom teacher or a counselor or, you know, in any admin role and not having those things already lined up and then going into COVID. I would imagine that was like debilitating, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think we felt lucky that we kind of had like that baseline in place. So now that was in place, then it's easier to kind of make the connections live on, right? Mm-hmm. So like I was just talking to somebody the other day and, you know, it was a lot of times we have these like rituals that we do, right? Like things that you do with your students or that you do with certain kids or little like, you know, inside jokes. And I think one of the things that we figured out really early is even though they look a little bit different, like we can still do those things remotely. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example. We have a teacher that likes to use this cowbell, and anytime there's an aha moment in his class, he rings this giant, it's like big cowbell, and it's kind of this fun thing. Well, he realized he could go to school and get that and bring that home, right? And do that same thing, even though it had a little different spin, it was the same gist of it, right? And so I think that's the kind of stuff that I was looking for, was how do I continue to do some of the rituals with students as a counselor that, you know, I continue, or you know what I mean, that I did before.
And for the most part in your school, because of the culture, was there a lot of participation in what you're experiencing is that the kids are using it to their advantage. They're using it positively, and you're not really seeing any issues with like behaviors or maybe bullying, cyberbullying going on?
I would say far less than most schools. You know, we see a little bit. Every once in a while, things pop up. I mean, I don't think any school is, you know, immune to little things that happen. But
what would you tell a school leader at the high school level who isn't sure of how to implement more social-emotional learning? If they're the leader of a large school and they realize that that's something that's important, that's missing at their school, what would you tell that leader?
So first off, buy my book, Award-Winning Culture. My book basically lays out exactly what I would tell to somebody. It is like a step-by-step, like there's tons of, you know, stories, but also practical advice and ideas and strategies. It really is about building a strong foundational why. Mm-hmm. So that starts with a staff why. I always recommend one whole year to implement an effective SEL character program. Mm-hmm. That really starts with pieces like training and figuring out all the school-wide like rollout of this, you know, having a clear vision and being able to articulate that vision to that staff. But really tying everything that you're doing with an SEL lessons or character development back to every other part of your school. So in the book, I lay out, you know, what should morning announcements look like? What should assemblies look like? What should parent teacher conferences look like? I mean, everything that relates back to that character work. So I guess the short answer would be time. You know, really take your time, do your homework, think it through, build your team, and train up your team over that extended period of time. And I you know, that's probably the number one question we get from leaders is, how do you get buy-in? Because realistically, Dana, we were probably at about 98% buy-in, which is unheard of. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that say they want to do SEL, but then they want someone else to do the SEL work, right? And so like we had a lot of school leaders going, how did you do that? And that is exactly what I laid out in the book. But it really starts with that time piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for them not to expect, it's just going to change overnight.
Yep.
They have to keep working on it. And the session after the distance learning and coming into the next school year with uncertainty. So what are your thoughts about how an educator can get from overwhelmed to the I love my job?
So I want readers to know this. When I taught in a district for, I think it was 16 years. Mm-hmm. It was one of Ohio's top districts. I had tons of access to professional development, great pay, a great school system. It was amazing. People don't usually leave that school system. Mm-hmm. It's too amazing. However, in my role, I felt like there was something missing. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't put my hand on it, but there was something missing. I mean, I loved my administrators. I loved the teachers I was working with. I don't know what that all was, but I was unsettled. And so, and probably a little getting, I don't know. I mean, by that point I was not as negative. I was kind of pulling myself out of this, but I want readers that are listeners, I want them to think about how are they feeling? What are they unsettled about? And if they can't figure it out, start creating that picture of what would be fulfilling? Like, what would it take to have you skip out of bed and be like, oh my gosh, I get to go to work today. I get to go do this role. Because once I started crafting that and reaching for that and doing it, I mean, my job lights me up. It fires me up. So I want readers to know that I didn't go from one okay job to this glorious position. it was something that I needed, something that my heart, my soul, it was just something that fueled me. It wasn't like I went to this prestigious district. I left a prestigious district to pursue this evolution of my educator journey. So wherever teachers are in the trenches, and holy moly, I think so many of us can identify with that. One of the biggest things is, I think, just kind of crafting that vision, that thing that you want. If you could wave that magic wand, where would you be? Like, if you could just craft that position, what would you be doing? I know at one of the schools, I created a before school book club for gifted kids. Usually those extra clubs or those extra before school times were for kids who were struggling, but our you know, high achieving kids needed something too. And it was something like the teachers were like, why are you doing that? It's before school. You're not getting paid. It was something that set me on fire. I was so excited and I could be really creative and not worry about grading and that kind of stuff. So whatever that is, create that, go down that path. And it might be extra work, but it's going to be work that fuels you and makes the rest of your day, the rest of your career better. And it feels so good to do something awesome, you know, and creative and supporting kids. So the vision would be one part. And the second part is making sure that you're scheduling time to take care of you. Whatever that is, going outside, connecting with nature, whatever that hobby is, you need to keep doing that. And if it's like, oh gosh, I wish I could read a book, I never have time to do that, you need to actually put it in your calendar. I think Marie Forleo says, if it ain't scheduled, it ain't happening. And so, I mean, even things like that, you know, reading, put it in your schedule and it will happen. I think exercise is important, whether it's just walking, that's going to kind of shift your perspective and kind of get you moving in a different direction. Something else I've been doing right now is called the Miracle Morning. And that's based on the work of Hal Elrod. He wrote a book called Miracle Morning. And I've adapted it to make it fit me. But every morning, I begin the day with prayer, with lots of gratitude for all the blessings in my life. And I do yoga every single morning. And if I've had, you know, if I stayed up longer one night, I might just do 5 minutes of yoga, just because I'm in that routine. I do yoga every single morning. And then I also have some affirmations. And one of my favorites is, love is at the center of all I do. And I think I got that from Danny Bauer. Even if you hold on to that one, I mean, that helps set the stage for what you're doing the whole day. And then just the service part, like I have one that says, I'm here to serve, because that's what we are as educators. We're servant leaders. We want to make that difference. We want to change lives, change the world. And so those are a few tips. That beautiful career that you think is maybe out of reach, you have the power to do that. And it might be going to another district. It might be reaching out to your administrators and saying, hey, I'd like to do this thing. You know, if you're an administrator, I remember talking to a principal and he said, you know, my dream would be going to a really small school, mm-hmm. High poverty, high need, and changing it and turning it around. I'm like, then do that, go do that. And even if it's taking a pay cut or something, if it's a heart decision, it's going to put you in the right path. It's going to put you in the right place. So I just want you to leave inspired and knowing that the trench doesn't have to hold you in. You can climb out.
Dana has been able to shift this way. So my first book, Balance Like a Pirate, Going Beyond Work-Life Balance, is really the basis of a lot of the consulting and speaking I've done. And I do that inside and outside of organizations associated with education. The message is very transferring and transformative. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, what I do is I just share our balance framework. And I encourage the participants, the people involved there, to start taking stock and being real about the spaces in their lives that they have not been able to give enough or a lot or satisfying intention to. Mm-hmm. And I really try to help them focus on the fact that it's not going to be 50-50. And so, like, right now, I know people are in intense modes of planning, but they're trying to have vacation time. So mm-hmm. How can you create a system where you're able to focus intentionally on those things that matter most to you so that you don't feel guilty where you are? Like, you can be present where you are. Because I know for me, and I'm sure people listening to this, I know for years I would struggle, because if I was feeling off balance, I would be at a sporting event or a concert or whatever after hours were requiring of me, and just feeling like a complete dissonance between my professional happiness and my home life, because I hadn't seen my kids in days, right? Mm-hmm. It sounds nuts to even say that, but it's a possibility when you're a school leader is to not see your children because of their sleeping patterns and yours. So anyway, not to try to get too far off of that I spend a lot of time just helping them do inventory of the time they're spending and helping them to feel empowered to take mini steps and actionable steps into building back some levels of satisfaction in the four areas of their life. We say they're your passions, your profession, your position, and your personal life. So all four of those need some level of attention. And I help leaders do that, to be honest, and mostly to help them give themselves permission to either let go of things that they can do to add more space or to say yes to the things they've been wanting.
You know, they really don't have anybody to talk to because there are issues that, you know, they don't really want to discuss within their district or with their supervisor, and just to have that listening ear and somebody who's kind of been there and can help guide them through those challenges. It's wonderful to have those experienced leaders available. So, I'm glad that you have.
You know, I just want them to remember that this journey is so complex, and we are all beautiful souls on complicated journeys. And there is so much coming that is unknown, and it can create a sense of overwhelm and fear, no matter what role you're serving in. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that if you focus and you drill down the foundations on any one of these things that I was talking about, this leading with faith idea is to really be able to rise up and slay that fear. And leaders, you are called to it. You get to be in a position this year, and that's hard. It's hard to remember when you're dealing with, you know, the conflict over masks and the fear that your learning communities might be in danger while you're also battling the sense that some people don't feel like this is real. But just keep in mind that you are the ones called to hear, and that you can fight that fear and you can overcome it, but it's got to start with you so that you can rise up to it.
Mm-hmm. Those are such great, powerful words to end with.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.